And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Johnny Donovan, thank you very much, and good Friday morning to you all. Welcome aboard the John Gambling Show with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, good morning to you.
Good morning. A little bit of rain outside.
Is there? I mean,
a spritzing, I think, would be the appropriate word.
Have you been to
Lluviznas in Spanish?
Showers. Lluviznas?
Yeah, it's just, you know, sort of spritzing. Spritzing.
You work
in
very
English.
Hard on your Spanish. You and I talk about it off the air all the time.
Absolutely right.
Tortures you, right?
With somebody, there's very few people that have as little ability as I have to learn a foreign language, and at my age, but I'm going to do it. Anyways, it's raining.
And you've been working on it now for, 6 years?
No, but for two or three, sure, off and on, I sort of lose, you know. It's like my golf game.
Baseball game? You got two teams to root for?
Yankees have them right where they want them, getting the other team overconfident when they go to Detroit. Mets, 2-0, looking forward to the next round for both teams. Hopefully they'll make it. It's, the games have been good games, and it's a lot of fun. I leave the spirit in everybody yelling and screaming.
Yeah, I walk through the train station, obviously, each and every day, and there's all sorts of people, and they've got their Yankee shirts on and the Mets shirts on.
I mean, if we could have a Subway Series, it'd be phenomenal for the city. No matter who you root for, it'd be wonderful. And if it went seven games and one team won in overtime, you know, so it'll go down as one of the great matchups in history. Yeah. My predecessor delivered a Subway Series. I sat with him at the Yankee game, and somebody said, is there going to be one? I said, well, this guy next to me delivered one. I better do it.
Did Rudy give you any tips on how to do that?
He is an unabashed Yankees fan.
He makes no bones about it.
I am an unabashed New York fan. I've chosen to stay out of
stay neutral on this one. Yeah, you can't win either. You're going in either direction.
But, you know, funny thing is, I know the owners of both teams. Great people, and you know, you hope for their sakes. And some of the players I've gotten to know a little bit, the managers, and they're, you know, I think both these teams, both these teams have managers who are great managers and could manage anything, not just a baseball team. They could manage companies or government organizations. They're both very talented. They're leaders. People, their players respect them, and they treat their players with respect.
And when you are a manager of a baseball team, you do it in the light of day. You do it under the bright light of sports.
I mean, I've always thought that elected officials have a really tough job in putting up with a press that's always critical, always looking for something wrong. But in all fairness, they have it worse. The sports press really works them over no matter what.
Yeah, it's part of the game. It's part of the job.
That's right. It is part of the job. So if you're thin-skinned, you can't do that.
We've got lots to talk about here. Let's see, where can I start with my time frame that we've got before we go to a break? Well, let's talk about the 9/11, the World Trade Center fund that you have been made head of, fundraising extraordinaire.
The cost of the memorial will be... We say $500 million. In fact, it's a decent amount more because the Port Authority will spend money preparing the infrastructure around it, and there's a lot of different moving parts here. Some of the money comes from the state. Some of the money comes from the LMDC, which was federal monies. Some of the money has to be raised privately, about $300 million.
And they have so much, how much so far?
Depending on 130, 140, depending on how you count it, because some gifts you're not 100% sure that you'll get all of it. But there's a long ways to go. And for 5 years, we've planned and worked, and everybody's expressed their views, including me. I had really wanted the memorial to go in a different direction, but the public process is everybody gets input, and then we had a panel, and they made a decision, and then it's time, and then you get behind that. And I think what they've chosen is great, and I will do everything I can to help raise the money and make it work. And there's some controversial things. We've been talking about some of it. There's an advertising slogan that the Memorial Foundation is using, it's time. And I think it is time. 5 years have come and passed for some of the relatives of the deceased. The pain hasn't gone away. For some of us, maybe we don't remember enough. Maybe we don't remember this was an attack on our freedoms, and we need to keep reminding ourselves not to let that happen again. So I think there's a number of different purposes here with the memorial. But I do think it's time to finish the talking and to make a decision, which is not going to please everybody, no matter what you do. You know, there's always
your job as chairman. Is it more than just the fundraising?
Well, you're chairman of the foundation.
It's
a democracy. You have an executive committee and you have a board. But
the memorial is not finalized. It's not wrapped up, right?
Very close. There are a handful of small things out there. Fundamentally, the design, after much discussion and arguing and press, we've settled on a design. We've settled on where the pieces go, and that's what we're going to build. And it's not, you know, you could sit here and talk about it forever. There are issues where half the people want to go left and half the people want to go right, and you can't do both. And so what we need here is somebody to just stand up, make a decision. Somebody said to me, well, if you do that, you'll have lots of people yelling at you. I said, that's what I do for a living.
That's what I get paid for, the whole dollar.
You need to, there is a time to just make a decision and go ahead. And I think in the fundraising, one of the reasons it's been difficult up until now is that donors want to know that there's somebody in charge who will make the tough decisions and stand up. Now, yesterday there were some people who picketed outside.
Now, how did you feel about that?
I didn't see them, but, you know, it's New York. I mean, that's democracy, and they have a right to say what they want to say. But I think everybody generally understands it's time to move ahead, and that's what we're going to do.
And moving ahead means what, from a construction standpoint?
The construction's actually
begun?
Started. If you go, you can see there are tractors and backhoes and men working, women working down on the footings, the beginning of building this up.
So the framework, the building itself, or the plaza itself is designed, is ready to go.
That's correct.
And
the museum, where it is, roughly what it looks like. We had a presentation yesterday from the curator, the head of the museum, as to her vision, which the board will then look at, of where she thinks and her assistants think this should go.
Has that controversy been put aside about some of the program that was talked about early on about a year ago?
Nothing is ever put aside in this, which is what's happened here. It's been controversial, and I think we have to go through that process. I think all of the pushing and shoving and yelling and screaming and kudos and whatever the opposite of kudos are, that's probably a necessary part of the process. You have to do that. I think 5 years is enough.
We're past that point now.
We are now past that point. We'll make a few decisions and just all get on with it. And, you know, if you didn't get your way, I didn't get my way. Okay. Get on board. That's where we're going, and it's time.
Good. Okay. It's time for me to take a break. Mr. Mayor, stay right where you are. Come right back at 77 WABC. We continue. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, and you here at 77 WABC. West Side Development. Read a little story this week that Sheldon Silver, who nixed, obviously, the Jet Stadium over there, is at it again and wants you to focus more downtown than West Side.
We are doing everything downtown. You just talked about the memorial. I can't do any more than add a whole nother full-time job to what I'm trying to do anyways. Downtown, the status is, you know, we all talk about downtown and we focus on the World Trade Center site, but it's a very small piece of all of downtown. The park along the east side of downtown is coming along. People are moving in. The amount of renovation down there is quite amazing. The new transit, the new subway stop across the street from the just completed Staten Island Ferry.
It was beautiful, by the way. We saw it when we were down there last week.
Ferry's beautiful. The building we were in is spectacular. I ran into Calatrava the other day. Things are chugging along on the Port Authority Terminal and the World Trade Center site. They're working on the foundations for the Freedom Tower. We've got a plan with Silverstein so that he'll be able to finish all of them. The demolition of the Deutsche Bank building is starting. It's a very complex long-term process because you're worried about contamination. But that is the crane up now next to it. The memorial we talked about, they're starting to work on that. So, I don't think Shelley should worry. All the pieces are there. But the city is a lot more than just any one area. And we have to build in all five boroughs and in all parts of all five boroughs at the same time. And that's what we're doing. And the West Side, this is the first new subway line since World War II, with the exception of the line that goes under Roosevelt Island, which was a small branch, and that was a good thing back then. But then the city's paying for it. Remember, the city is paying $2
billion. I was going to say $2.1 billion.
Right, of its own money to build this. You can argue that the state should be paying for this. It's an MTA project. MTA is a state agency. But the city's doing it, and there will be, once you put in the subway line to the west side, there will be a lot of interest in all of this land. If you take a look at London, Canary Wharf, which is a big island development, harbor development, which went ahead without mass transit, with a promise of mass transit, then the developers, the Reichmans, went bankrupt. Because mass transit never arrived, and if you can't get there,
the people.
If you can't have mass transit, the people don't arrive. That's exactly right. They then built, I think it's called a Jubilee line, the subway over to there, and then of course the next owner made a fortune because it's been a very successful development. Here, nobody's going to go to the west side after learning that lesson until the subway's going, and that is going ahead. We're starting to work it on already. We hope to be tunneling by the first of the year.
Are they going to tunnel the way they – there's a couple of different ways to tunnel. Are they going to go from the top?
No, that's trenching.
Right.
This is tunneling.
They're actually
going to
you
dig a hole, you put a piece of machinery down there, and you go sideways.
So there'll be no disruption above ground.
Wherever, if you have a subway stop, yeah. It's the same thing with a water tunnel. The only place you know it's happening is where they have to put a vent coming up so they can bring water up to connect into the mains.
It's fascinating what's under New York City and the different layers. Will they tunnel deep enough to go down through below all the utilities?
The utilities, are really a few feet down because they have to constantly get dug up. That's one of the problems, but it's the only ways you could make them work. Everything's below that. But you have to. There's no subway lines over there, but you do have, I think you have a path line coming through there. There are all sorts of big things underground over many, many years, and sure, they'll have to do it below.
How about
that.
The 2nd Avenue subway?
Subway is going on as well. I mean, they're about to start tunneling southbound as well. That one will get done. It's amazing how many projects are getting done. But you just can't do only one. You have to do them all at the same time.
Okay. Well, you and I have talked many, many times about the economics of New York City and its health and otherwise. Stock market at a record high. What do you make of all of this? I mean, from your business point of view.
I think a lot of economists thought the economy would slow down before now. There are some disturbing signs. Housing market slowing down, clearly new housing sales and prices of
conflicting
houses.
Conflicting reports this week on Manhattan real estate.
The world is a complex place. There's no one signal where everybody's on board. There's always some things going up, some things going down. You have to look at which is most important, which are leading indicators, which are lagging indicators, which are more important. I don't think there's a good argument to be made that the housing market isn't slowing down. There are pockets where it's not. There are pockets where it's still going up. Condominiums and co-ops, the co-op market's down, the condominium market's up. That has nothing to do maybe with real estate, with the demand for an apartment. It's the structure. Condominiums, you don't have to go by a board the way you do in a co-op, and a lot of people don't want to think it's intrusive to have a board look at their personal finances. On the other hand, there's a lot of new building, and it's going to be take a while to absorb. Nevertheless, we have record prices. We have record population here. We're up to 8.2 million people.
Yeah, I heard you found 90,000 people or something.
Well, the census, the way it works is cities then go back and say you didn't count here, you didn't count that. And everybody wants to have a bigger population because you get more representation in Congress and a bigger share of federal dollars. Yeah. Sure, when they split it up based on population, the bigger the population, the more you'll get. So everybody has a vested interest in that. But I think the commercial vacancy rate is as low as it's been downtown, you know, which we were talking about with Shelley. Vacancy rate is minuscule. These new buildings will be a challenge to fill, but they won't be available for 2 or 3 years, 5 years, or more, so that you got to look forward to the real estate market, whether there's demand there or not. What is encouraging is if you look across the river in New Jersey, directly across, the vacancy rate has gone from, 13% to 20%, and downtown Manhattan it's gone from 20% to 13%. So there are those who say our taxes are too high, and taxes are always too high, but there are other factors that people use in deciding where to locate their companies and where to live, and I think the bottom line
is... So you're bullish, basically.
Yeah, I think that the hand that New York has for the foreseeable future is a very strong hand to play. As long as crime continues to come down and the schools keep getting better, both those things clearly are happening. As long as our cultural institutions keep growing and the parks get better and the streets are cleaner, then the future of this city really is bright. And I was talking to, I was at a breakfast the other day at a business group. They asked me to come and speak to their executive committee, and they had tried to move people outside the city, and they just can't. And people live wherever they're moving are happy, but they can't get young people to go. People want to come to the city and live in the city. And it's interesting. The city, by this definition, isn't just Manhattan anymore. People want to live in Brooklyn. People want to live in Queens. People want to live in the Bronx. People want to live in Staten Island, not just in Manhattan, because these other places have become exciting as well. Great restaurants and museums.
I can't believe Long Island City, the apartments that they are building right over the train yards. Off the charts and spectacular and very upscale.
Yeah. I mean, we said a five-borough strategy. You know, this is Doctoroff. Doctoroff, by the time he gets done, will have a greater impact on the city, I think, than Robert Moses. And in a much more democratic world with a lot more community input and a lot more supervision from the courts and the legislature, he doesn't have the power to go do it the way Robert Moses did. But Doctoroff and all the people that work with him, our administration, really, in every borough, all these big projects, that's the future of this city, and that's why people want to live here.
All right, Michael Bloomberg is with us on a Friday at 77 WABC. There's more to come. First, we continue. John Gambling with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. Explain to us, like we got into it with Curtis and Kuby just before 10 o'clock a little bit, about the experiment of privatizing some small schools within schools. Money came from the Gates Foundation a number of years ago.
It doesn't apply to very many schools. It's an experiment. And it's something we've talked about, but I gather it's a long ways before they'd even come to me and say, okay, here are the issues and good idea, do you want to do it or not do it? And generally, I side with the chancellor's recommendation. That's what he's there for, but not always. Anyways, thanks to the generosity of the Gates Foundation, we've been able to open some of these small schools. They are run. The supervision is from the infrastructure of the Department of Education. The teachers are UFD teachers. And these are generally not charter schools. They're theme schools. And a private organization provides after-school program and counseling and things like that. One of the proposals is to see if you turned a few of them and had them do the management with the same staff, but them do the management. Would the results be different? I don't know, and we'll have to take a look at it. You always want to try new things, and there's so many people say, oh, no, absolutely not, it would be terrible. Well, I don't know if it's terrible, and I don't think they know if it's going to be terrible. I think if you don't try, you will keep doing the same old thing, and that's not acceptable.
All right, the chancellor has discovered that many of the school buses set out to pick
up. This is one of those
little children.
Remember, he hired a company with much to do about a no-bid contract, but which was legal and which the controller approved.
Consultant who
looks for things. One of the things they found is, and I don't know how big it is, but it's something. Every dollar is real money.
Millions of dollars, they say.
A taxpayer's money, even if it's $1. And we need the money in the classroom. And they said that we are required to provide transportation particular, for example, to, we do it for most students, but for special ed kids. But if the special ed kids, if we go to a bus company and charter a bus to drive the route every day, but the parents drive the kid to school and they don't use the bus, why are we paying the bus company? It's a waste of money. So, you know, the courts can't be that unreasonable. They say you've got to provide it, but if it's not needed and not used, then there's no reason to waste the public's money. So Joel's coming up with programs where the bus company only gets paid if there are students on the bus.
And they have to register for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we try to,
the last day.
Yeah, and then we'll try to make sure that if they register, they use it, because it's just wasting money. You register and don't use it, we need that money in the classroom.
Also, in the same article, they talked about utilities. I have to be astronomical running the schools, just the buildings.
Sure, we have 1,400 plus schools. You know, I don't know how many, probably a couple thousand buildings by the time you add everything together or close to that. The budget of the Department of Education is $15.5 billion. That's a lot of money. That's more than the budgets of most states, more than the GNP of a lot of countries. That's just our Department of Education, and there's no reason to waste any money. People always say they want more. My first thought is, let's make sure that the monies that we're spending go to get the services that we need.
You have been an advocate, you mentioned it here many, many times, about reviewing program, and if that program is not successful, eliminating it.
Yep.
Have these consultants, has Joel Klein's office
been
going
through everything. They'll come up with some things which make sense, some things which don't. It's easy, isn't it, for an outsider to look, and it's a little more difficult when you really, when the insiders really look at it. Sometimes there are things you just can't do because the law requires some judge's decision. Some things, just from a political point of view, it's just not worth having a fight. You're not going to win that, and you just can't fight everything. So, you know, you look at each of these things and keep making progress. And if you make a little bit of progress every day, after a year or two, you look back, you'll be shocked at how far you come. If you try to go to the end game overnight, one fell swoop, you will never do anything.
The president yesterday said that his No Child Left Behind Act is going to be something that he's going to lobby for because it runs out. He said he wants to make some changes. Is Joel Klein and generally happy with
works?
Well,
some things work, some things don't. Keep in mind, for a start, New York City is so big and so different that a lot of these federal laws really never make sense for the city. We have a much more diverse student body, for example, than any other place. So if you say every student has to speak English, or it's the school is categorized as a low performing school, that's nonsensical in a place where people have just arrived and don't speak English, or the kids don't speak good English, if at all. And we have to provide services for them. And eventually they have to learn English, because this is an English-speaking country. And if they don't learn to speak good English, they won't be able to share in the great American dream. But I think the answer to your question is some parts of it work. Some parts would be better changed. I wrote an op-ed piece for the Washington Post with Jeb Bush, who's a retiring governor of Florida, happens to be the president's brother, has had a very good record as governor of Florida, really focused on education. And together we've written about standards that should be applied nationally, because if each state gets a chance to set their own standards, and if the money comes based on how you succeed versus those standards, there's a big impetus for states to reduce the standards so they'll look better and get more money.
That's not in the
country's interest. You want to keep raising standards. You want an incentive for states to raise the standards and to set the goals higher, even if you don't quite make it. I'd always rather have a goal that I can't attain, but I'm going to try to, because I'll go further than if I had a low goal that's easy to obtain, because I'm not going to go any further than that.
There seems to be a reluctance in the educational community to do that, however. I'm talking about broad...
There's
I'm
general... Broad. I don't want to overstate it, but there is, in every part of our society, private and public, there's a reluctance to change. You know, the devil you know versus the devil you don't. We all get complacent. Change is scary. Raising standards and expectations makes you have to do things different, work harder, change. Some people love it, some people don't. So there's, I don't think you can just pick on education. I just think that's a characteristic of human beings. And those of us that either do it ourselves or get forced to change typically are those who will have a future down the road. And those that don't change, eventually you get left behind. And when you say, oh, you know, there's some institutions that are never going to go away, well, I don't have to change, I'll be okay. People that worked for General Motors and Ford thought that, and here are these two companies in very big trouble. If you go back to the 70s, people who think that you never have layoffs in city government. I remember Ray Kelly telling me his lieutenant collecting guns from police officers that were laid off. I was with Harry Nespoli, who's a very good labor leader, runs the sanitation union Teamsters Local 831, and they really do a good job. The city is so clean. People keep talking about it. These guys really work hard. But he remembers he got laid off for a couple of years back in those days. So, you know, none of us are secure, nor should we be. You always want to have to struggle and change and raise your standards and work harder. And I think that's what's exciting.
This week we had that incomprehensible event down in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Those little girls in that one room schoolhouse. It was etched, I think, in America's minds yesterday when we saw the black buggies with the horses in line to the to the funerals. It's just horrible. Yeah. We know how you feel and where you stand on guns. You were in Boston yesterday talking with the mayor up there. There's been a couple of editorials and op-ed pieces this past week. Are we too violent a group in your mind?
Well, in this case, my understanding of this tragedy in the Amish country was the gun was a legal gun. This was not an illegal gun. And there will always be, crazy people. It's a nice way to phrase it, but the vernacular.
It's a crazy guy.
And tragedies like that. I'm focusing on illegal guns because there's 30,000 people killed in America by guns every year. Are we too violent?
My question goes beyond guns. It's more, I mean, when you watch on television and you see what cultures and what they push and what's accepted.
I can only talk about New York City, okay? That's the only thing I have. I'd say I'm an expert. A lot of people would question that, but at least it's fair to say I know more about that than any place else. Crime continues to come down. Crime's going up in the country, sadly, but it continues to come down in the city, down another 5% this year after 9 months. And I think that we are a less violent city by a lot than what we used to be. And we've got to keep that going and understand we're all here together and we can work side by side. And the other person, they may be different and strange, but if you gave them a chance, you'd find them interesting.
So do you think that culturally we here in New York City, I'll bring it back down to home base?
Well, you know, you can say that
nicer?
And then tomorrow some crazy person does something despicable and disgraceful and tragic. But yeah, I do think that we are better, safer, and that means we're less violent than we used to be. And I don't want to compare us to any place else. This is not a zero-sum game. We don't gain by anybody else losing. We've got to look in a mirror and take care of ourselves. We still have crime. We still have problems with some gangs. Not as much anyways, near as much as other cities. I was with the mayors of Boston, Providence, and Yonkers yesterday at this gun thing. And it's interesting, you know, the towns are very different in size from us at 8 million to Yonkers probably smaller than Providence at a couple hundred thousand. But there are similar kinds of problems. But these, in this case, these three guys really are good mayors, and they've focused on bringing crime down. There are some very good mayors in the city. I had dinner last night with Cory Booker, who's the new mayor of Newark.
Of Newark, yeah.
Got a heck of a job in front of him, but there's somebody everybody hopes succeeds. And, you know, bright young face, the mayor of Philadelphia, John Street's a good guy. We did a gun thing with him. The mayor of Trenton, New Jersey, aggressive, smart. All of us have different problems and some of the similar, some aren't. But this city's doing well.
Good for you. Okay, we're going to open up the phones, 1-800-848-WABC, as we do each week. If you have a question. We continue here at 77 WABC. Mr. Mayor, where do you want to go first here?
Well, let's start Gary in Manhattan.
Gary in Manhattan, you've got the mayor. Keep it short. What's your question?
Good morning, Mayor Bloomberg. This is Gary Ireland from Stuyvesant Town.
Hi.
Given your recent proposal to preserve and create affordable housing in New York City, and given Metropolitan Life's intended sale of Stuyvesant Town and Peter Cooper, which are over 11,000 units of middle-class housing, and MetLife is advertising them to become luxury housing, what have you done to preserve Stuytown Peter Cooper for the middle class New Yorkers?
Well, MetLife owns it, and they have a legal right to sell it. And this is a very attractive investment. I'm told, if you read the papers, which is basically what I know, there's 20-odd bidders. Groups, they will. This will go for an enormous amount of money.
That's an enormous project.
Yeah, it is. I don't know, Gary, that it's fair to characterize it that they're selling it as luxury. About 75% of it is rent stabilized, and that will go down to 30% over the next 15, 20 years. People of 15, 20 years, few people who live there today will be living there. People just don't live on average. There is some turnover, and that's a long time. What we're trying to do, Gary, is to make sure that we continue to build low and middle income housing and get the marketplace to do it throughout this city. And we're working on, as you know, a number of projects. I've committed to build a rehab, 165,000 units of affordable housing. That'll hold more people than live in Atlanta, Georgia. But also, the most impressive thing is the private sector coming in and building affordable and middle-income housing in all five boroughs. And I don't know who's going to win the bidding for Stuyvesant Town and Peter Cooper Village. They're beautiful areas, and you know, a lot of people want to live there, which is one of the problems. When you have a lot of people wanting to live there, prices go up. When nobody wants to live there, prices go down. And so you always feel sorry for those who can't afford it, but those who can afford it say, well, what about me? Don't I have a right to, if I get lucky, work hard, whatever, come in? I think the character of this community will change, but it will change slowly over time, and it would change whether this project is, whether this is sold or not. MetLife has an investment. They made it, I think, 60 years ago. They built it, and yeah, now they want to diversify.
They want their return. Gary, thanks for the phone call. Next, Mr. Mayor.
Richard.
Richard in Rivervale. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, good morning.
Real fast, because we're almost out of time. Real fast.
Are there any plans for refurbishing or expanding the 79th Street boat basin?
I've called our economic development people and tried to ask. John Gamling tells me that this has been a wreck for a long time. He knows. I drive down the West Side Highway and look at the boats. They're pretty. I've never been in the marina.
20 years it's been needed to be replaced.
I can tell you this. I will ask, particularly on later this afternoon or Monday. Let's take one more call.
Okay.
Gary.
Gary, you're up. Real fast, Gary.
Yes, sir. I want to know your thoughts about the incident that occurred in Columbia University.
Yeah, if you're talking about the people getting pushed off the stage, booed is the wrong word. Look, freedom of speech is freedom of speech. And I think it's an outrage that somebody that was invited didn't get a chance to speak. I don't care whether you're from the hard left, the hard right. I don't care what you say. Number one, if you get invited, whoever invites you has should have the courtesy to let you speak and provide the protection so that you can do it. And particularly on university campuses. Universities are supposed to be where you can express your views, and no matter how distasteful they may be to somebody. And from what I read in the paper, once again, Columbia's really, Bollinger's just got to get his hands around this. There's just too many incidents at the same school where people get censured, or they invite some people, which, what do you need the aggravation for? Like the Iranian.
You can't just hear all the time the words you want to hear. It doesn't work that way.
The First Amendment's a wonderful thing. You either believe in free speech or you don't.
See you next Friday.
Looking forward to it.
I hope you have a good week. So do we. Hopefully we all will have a good week. Stick around. We've got more to go here on the John Gamling Show Friday edition.